It's Tuesday. It's election day in the United States. If you live in the United States and you are alive and conscious, then this is an incredibly stressful day. And normally I would spend the day scrolling through social media, attempting to distract myself, but utterly failing. And instead, I thought it would be a good idea to go ahead and record an episode of my bear show to take my mind off of all the gloom and doom and just chat about something upbeat and fun for a change. So I'm just going to dig into my stack of books here and see what I have next on the docket. Let's see, flipping through. All right, here we go. The Berenstain Bears lose a friend. Oh, for Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. What is this tone of voice that I am using? It's not my usual boisterous intro. It's a more mellow intro. And do you know why? It's because I'm trying not to distract the elementary school student in the next room over by bellowing about my bear podcast. That's why. It's the middle of the day, and Mitzi is in class, and I am trying to record this episode and just failing utterly at it because I'm usually big and bombastic, but also not feeling particularly big and bombastic today. I don't have a producer. I am the only one who does this thing, so I get to be however I want. And this week, we are taking a look at The Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend by Stan and Jan Berenstain with Mike Berenstain. This is a 2007 HarperCollins storybook. It's part of it's the beginning of the transition now from Random House to HarperCollins. This is essentially a first time book. We've looked at these before from HarperCollins. They're not called first time books at this point. They're just Berenstain Bear storybooks, but it's the same thing. Same format, square shaped. But this clearly has Mike's fingerprints all over it. It looks like Mike. If I'm wrong, I'm terribly sorry, but I think this is a Mike illustrated book. It could also be Jan. I'm not sure. We're at a transitional period here. There's a simplicity to the line art. We're still getting some nice watercolors. The layout looks a little more, I hesitate to use the word slapdash because that sounds judgmental, but the layout is a little less detailed. It looks a little less thought out. We have Honey Bear present with the family, but we still haven't gotten her proportions quite down. In a lot of the pictures where she's being held, she kind of resembles those medieval paintings of baby Jesus where he just looks like a little adult man, because Honey Bear is the proportionately a regular bear. Her torso is very long, her legs are very long, her arms are very long, and her head is very small. She just doesn't look like a baby or even a toddler. So they haven't really settled on a plan here for the look and feel of Honey Bear, which is fine. Baby steps, no pun intended. But this is a special book, The Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend. It's not special because of the content, although the content is different. It's not special because of the writing style. It's not special because of the art. It is instead special because this book, from the mouth of Mike himself, for longtime listeners of the show, when I went and visited Mike Berenstain with Brad Mariska and Jeremy Gloff, and we went to his home in Pennsylvania and explored his studio, we sat down with him and interviewed him. And one of the questions we asked was, what was one of the least successful Berenstain Bears books? Which one caught you by surprise that it didn't do better? And he was like, oh, definitely Lose a Friend. And we were like, really? He's like, oh yeah, that was one of our biggest failures. Like bombs. It especially took them by surprise because they thought it was a sure shot until he reflected on what they actually put out into the public and realized this book never stood a chance. Also, it's a weird book for what it's trying to accomplish. It basically goes about it in about as incorrect a way as you could possibly do. And this isn't even incorrect in the way the Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers was incorrect. Because at least the Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers was using the knowledge of the time to give advice to parents. It was doing what everyone was saying you do to teach children about strangers. You taught them about stranger danger and not talking to strangers, yada, yada, yada. And of course, it was years, you know, a few more years of development and research before they realized that's just not how you go about doing that. You teach children to be comfortable with strangers because 99 times out of 100, if they get lost or get in trouble, it's going to be a stranger who helps them. So you teach them how to not go away with strangers. How not to be alone with strangers. And you do that by, of course, teaching them to ask their parents' permission before they go along alone with anyone, before they get into anyone's car, for strangers or a best friends or a grandparents. You just teach them to flatten everything out by saying, I have to talk to my parents. Just a little reminder for those of you who didn't listen to my two-parter on the Berenstain Bears Learn About Strangers. But this is the Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend. And it's really, with the exception of chapter books that deal in murder, the only book that really ever confronts the concept of death, also excluding any books about Jesus dying and returning from the grave. This is their big, we're going to put out a book about grief and loss and death. I don't remember, but I believe it might have been at the request of the publisher. Like, it's time for you guys to deal with death. That's what the first time books are all about. Eventually, a child is going to have to confront loss of a, you know, entity that means a lot to them, be it a friend or a relative or a pet. That's something children deal with. And so it makes sense that the Berenstain Bears would have a book about death. Unfortunately, this book uses the most ham-fisted, sitcom-y way of dealing with the death of a pet that I have seen in a book that wasn't a parody of the subject itself, or wasn't an episode of, I don't know, Family Matters or Sister Sister or some Saturday. This is the most bizarrely stereotypical, useless helping book I have come across in the Berenstain Bears, considering the topic, considering what they're going for. And I have to believe it's simply because their heart just didn't seem to be in it. The bears were not equipped to deal with the subject. The Berenstains were not prepared to deal with this subject. They're not psychologists. They are not children's therapists. But still, a quick look or questioning of a professional on this subject, I believe, could have produced a much more useful, much more sensitive, and much more caring book than what we ended up with. So what is the Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend? Well, let's dive on in and take a look. It's sad to lose a friend. It makes us wonder why. But a family's love and care can help us say goodbye. And you know what? That's a great beginning. That is a great introduction. It is sad to lose a friend. It's terribly sad to lose a friend. Speaking as someone who has lost friends, I can say that there is something that it creates a crater in your heart that never goes away. My best friend in elementary school was a delightful young boy named Philip. That was my first name as well. And he passed away a few years ago. And even though we had grown apart as friends, even though that we had lost contact with each other over the decades, we met up again on social media. And for several years, he would sort of flit in and out of my comments. He would flit in and out of my on my wall. He'd post things. He was incredibly active in his community, and he was very outspoken politically, and just a delightful human being. He grew from a delightful young man into a delightful my age man, I guess is how I would say it. And then one day he died, and it was shocking and unexpected on my part. He had been sick for a while, but in and out of hospitals. And he was never really open about what was going on. But he was very public about the fact that, you know, he was in and out of the hospital getting tests done. And then one day someone posted on his wall that he had died. He had gone into the hospital for a checkup and hadn't come out. And I was devastated. I was at a loss. I did not know how to deal with that emotionally, because it was as if a part of my childhood had been taken away. Like, oh my God, all I had left was memories. And I had lost acquaintances and friends, but there was something about losing someone from my childhood that really, really hit me in a way I hadn't experienced before. So it is sad to lose a friend, Berenstains. I agree with that. It makes us wonder why. It didn't make me wonder why. But it does make a child wonder why. I don't deal with those questions. I understand that death is inevitable and it happens to everyone, and that bodies are weird and life is rare and honestly, and that the fact that we are able to amble through this world for as many decades as we are is, in some ways, I hesitate to use the word miracle, but it is in some ways just the least likely thing on the planet, the fact that we do get as long as we do. So I don't wonder why someone dies. I sometimes wonder why we are even here. But to a child, the loss of a friend especially can send them to some pretty fascinating places, some pretty scary places, some pretty enlightening places. But it says a family's love and care can help us say goodbye. And that is very true. The support and sympathy and constant just I am there for you of a family or a close friend, whatever that means to you, will help us make that transition. Will help us make the transition from living in a world in which our friend exists and contributes in real time to our joys and our sorrows and our development as people into a world where they only exist in memory. And that is to be in the liminal space where you are still dealing with that loss and you have not transitioned from one state to the next is terrifying for a child at times. It can also be not terrifying for a child, but it's a dodgy place to be. And it takes a while, and it's important that they have support there. So everything in this rhyme, it's sad to lose a friend, it makes us wonder why, but a family's love and care can help us say goodbye. That is spot on. And unfortunately, that is the last time this book is spot on for the rest of the pages. This is the last thing they get right. There's a few details here and there they get correct, but it's telling that this poem is written on the inside of a murky fishbowl because this entire book is nothing but a murky fishbowl. So here we go. Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend. The splash page is their dog and their cat looking out a window at a hill on which is a rock that says Goldie on it and an empty fishbowl in the foreground. So we are already aware that this is going to be a book about death and burial, apparently. So we spend a couple of chapters, oh, by the way, this is a 700-page novel. No, we spend a couple of pages discussing the nature of pets, what a pet is, what's the joy of having a pet. You know, dogs and cats are very interactive. You play with them. It says you can train a parakeet to sit on your finger. Knowing that I have friends who have birds and are bird people, I can say that you can also hang out with and play with a bird. They are, depending on the breed, birds can be extremely social and interactive. They have personalities. You just have to be, get used to the fact that they can't control their bowels. They literally can't. And they tend to bite things a lot because birds explore with their beaks. But it also says there are bunnies you can cuddle. And I know you can cuddle bunnies. I also know from my friends who are rabbit people that they have as much personality as dogs and cats. They are bouncy and fun. They're rodents. Not rodents. They are like that cousin of rodents. What are rabbits? They have a weird, their own little subcategory. They're not like dogs and cats. They have their own, like their minds are more peculiar. So you kind of have to get used to that. But again, very social animals when you get to know them. It talks about like farm animals, like chicks and roosters and chickens. From my friends who have chickens and roosters and chicks, I can tell you that those are social in a very different way, but also those are animals with vibrant personalities as well. People who have chickens, you get to know these animals. You get to know them for their personality quirks. You get to know them for their fears and their loves and their desires. They're wonderful, wonderful animals. If you're the kind of person who can relate to barnyard fowl. And then it says, then there's goldfish, and it says quiet, shy goldfish. And it says like, you can't play with them. You just kind of watch goldfish. You admire goldfish. There's something more that you meditate on is kind of the point that they're getting to. And we have weird relationships with fish as animals. They are typically regarded as food, a food source. And if we have them as pets, they are ornamental. They are ornamental figures. But I also know from people who live with fish, who surround themselves with fish, who allow fish more freedom than they typically have in their small aquariums or, heaven forbid, round glass bowls, that fish themselves have personalities and personality traits and quirks. Might not shine through in the way we expect personality traits and quirks to shine through in a mammal or in a bird, but fish are just as much members of this ecosystem and this animal community as anyone else. And if a goldfish is allowed to thrive and grow, especially in a large pond, they can, they're hardy beasts. They'll grow large, they'll grow fat and happy, and they will respond to the presence of people. And that's one thing that Sister learns about Goldie the goldfish, because it's the family goldfish, but Sister sort of adopted it as her own, and she's gotten to know it. She feeds it a lot, you know, twice a day. She's learned its personality quirks, that when she goes to feed Goldie, she'll come over and say hello, and Goldie will bump her nose against the fishbowl when she sees Sister with the food shaker. And then she'll jump up and do what Sister thinks of as a little dance, nipping at the floating fish food. Goldie has a certain appearance and a certain style about her that Sister knows is Goldie. And every day, so Sister has sort of adopted this fish as her own fish. She takes care of Goldie. She cleans out her bowl every third day. She's very gentle when she scoops her out with her net, puts her in a glass of clean water, cleans out the bowl, and puts Goldie back in the bowl. And not only does Sister take care of the fish, but Sister worries about this fish, because a goldfish in a bowl is sort of a sad looking thing, especially when there's nothing else in the bowl. However, one thing the book doesn't get into, and one thing that people might not even be aware of, even though I think this is more common knowledge than it used to be, is that bowls are terrible places for fish to be. They are bad as far as the surface-to-air ratio, meaning that the water surface being exposed to air, the amount of water surface compared to the amount of water in the bowl allows too much oxygen to get out. Or it's the way the air goes in and out of the water. I don't quite understand it, but they're like, yeah, the bowls, the ratio is off. It's poor. You can't regulate the temperature in a goldfish bowl. There's just no way to do that. You can't put a heater in it. The water is, there's so little water in a goldfish bowl that it responds to the room temperature very quickly, which makes goldfish uncomfortable and also can lead to their untimely demises. You can't filter the water in a goldfish bowl, as Sister seems to know, so which means that you have to clean them like every other day, because fish create waste, and waste just sits around building up in the bowl, even if it's only a couple of days, and that's bad for a fish's health. Fish can't swim very far in bowls, which is kind of cruel to an animal. Like, they sort of get stuck in this like confined space. Fish can also jump out of bowls and die, because fish can jump. Things can fall into a bowl and poison the fish. And the shape of a bowl distorts the fish's view of the world. It looks out of a bowl and it just sees this weird, it can't see what's actually in there or out there. It's weird. And almost everyone would say, but you buy it. If you want fish, you buy an aquarium and you filter the water and you regulate the temperature and you treat them well, because goldfish are not gold. There's a myth about goldfish. These are animals that are only supposed to live a few weeks or months anyway. That's not true. Goldfish can live a long time in a good environment. So in fact, in Rome, goldfish bowls have been banned. They do not allow them to be sold because they are considered cruel places to keep a fish. So that's my spiel on goldfish bowls. In my office at work, they decided to buy a goldfish, and they were like, we're going to get a fish, an office fish, and we'll have a bowl. And I said, nope, that's not good. If we're going to buy a fish, we're going to buy a proper tank for the fish. So we went out and we bought the proper tank with the proper filter and the proper, temperature control element and the proper kind of food. And we brought it into the office. We set it all up as described by the people with the right, filtration and everything. And the fish still died in 2 days. I don't understand what happened. It was terrible. It was sad. We threw that thing away and we forgot all about it. And I felt guilty for like 3 months after that because I'm terrible with animals. And so sister's like, this fish hates this bowl. So she goes and she gets pebbles from the backyard brook and puts them in, which I'm like, okay, you probably should have had gravel in the bowl in the first place anyway. But also, it seems tricky putting just putting wild gravel into a goldfish bowl. They get a castle for Goldie. They get some decorative elements for the bowl so that Goldie can swim around and hide, which is important. When fish get stressed, they need a place to duck away and hide. So she has this little castle in there. And sister gets to know Goldie pretty well. Sister has adopted this fish as her own. Unfortunately, Goldie dies during the day. Mama finds her while dusting the room and flips out. And well, she doesn't flip out. She doesn't start freaking out and trashing the room or anything. But she's like, oh, dip. And we see a drawing of Goldie floating upside down in the bowl. So she calls Papa in and Papa's like, and she's like, what do you think? And he's like, I think Goldie's dead. And it's true. Goldie is dead. And so here's where the story. Okay, so already we've got this. We've got a decent setup to a book. Also, we're more than halfway done at this point. So they're saving a lot for the end. Considering this is supposed to be a book about loss and grief, I guess, and the death of a fish. Now, sister is supposed to be like 5 or 6 at this point, maybe 7 at this point, since she has a little sister now. Maybe they've aged her up a little bit, but she's still very young, is what I'm saying. And when I was a kid, I had a friend whose house I used to spend the night at quite a bit, and he had a goldfish. I believe was named Goldie. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think his goldfish was named Goldie. Anyway, one weekend, I was spending the night at his house. It was elementary school age, I am sure. Probably like 4th or 5th grade. He was like a year younger than I was. And while we were there, his goldfish died. And I found it. I saw the fish floating. And I had had goldfish. I had lost goldfish. I'm a bad pet owner. Like, as a kid, it didn't affect me really at all. I was like, oh, all right, that's what happens with fish, I guess. Just died. I am now a very different person. And now if a fish dies in front of me, like, that I'm supposed to be, I had a betta fish and it died and I was inconsolable. Not because, like, I really knew this fish very well, but because I felt so guilty about an animal dying under my care. But in any case, I found the fish in his room and I was like, hey, I think your fish is dead. And he was like, what? And he comes over. And he sees the fish floating, you know, on its side in the bowl. And he was like, no, she's just sleeping. And he like taps on the bowl and he pushes the fish a little bit. And this fish is dead. And he lost it. He had a complete, absolute meltdown freak out in front of me. And first of all, kudos to him for not trying to keep it together. Like he knew who he was and he had an absolute meltdown. But he also, his mom came rushing in because he was screaming and crying and she was like, oh no. And then she's like, well, we got to get rid of the fish. And I remember him like begging his mom to let the fish stay in the bowl. He's like, we can just let it float around. Look at this. And that was the moment where this went from, oh my God, I can't believe my friend is freaking out about a dead fish to, oh my God, my friend is actually like super upset about this. I don't know how to deal with it. And because he was so upset that he wanted to keep the dead fish in the bowl. And of course the mom had to say, we can't, it's going to start smelling bad. You can't keep a dead animal in your bedroom. We got to get rid of the fish. And so I don't remember what happened. I think they flushed the fish, I believe, but yeah, it was respectfully done. And he was kind of a mess. I mean, maybe he was kind of a mess. He was kind of a mess for like an hour. And then, I don't know, we played Commodore Amiga games because we loved playing on the Amiga. But this is my way of saying that, yes, this is a huge deal for children. I mean, if you look at any kind of like expert thing about teaching children about death, particularly about the death of a pet, they say this is usually like a child's first experience with this, but particularly like kids around the age of like 6, 7 years old are going to have a lot of questions about it. It's going to affect them a lot. And there was an article in the New York Times a few years ago called When a Pet Dies, Helping Children Through the Worst Day of Their Lives. It says in a study of kids ages 6 to 13 who'd lost a pet, they found that years later, kids still describe that as, quote, the worst day of their lives. Like, it makes this huge impact. So this is now a book about parents discovering the death of an animal that is going to have a profound impact on their children's life. And Papa's like, let's just buy a new fish. And Mom is like, what? He's like, fish, it's a goldfish. They all look the same. Well, he says, that way nobody will be the wiser. Poor sister won't be crying her eyes out. And Mom is like, that doesn't sound like it. And Papa leaves and he goes to buy a new fish. Now, this is the point where usually Mama would be like, this isn't going to work. I'm the smart one here. This isn't going to. And Papa goes to the pet store, picks out a fish that looks just like Goldie, brings it back. And Mama goes along with it. She's like, just put it in the bowl. So brother and sister come home from school. Sister goes over to say hello to Goldie, to say goodnight, and the fish doesn't bump its nose against the bowl like she's used to it. Because remember, this fish has a personality, and it's not acting like Goldie. But she's like, oh man, okay. It just stays in it. It's freaked out. It's in its little castle. And so she's like, that's fine, I guess. The next morning, she goes back to say hello to the fish and feed it. And she's like, This isn't working. This is weird. And Mama and Papa are standing in the background. Mama has her fingers in her mouth, like, and Papa's standing behind her with this look of like absolute resignation and sadness on his face. Like, oh no, we screwed up and we're about to pay the ultimate sacrifice as parents for this. Sister has a complete freak out. She starts screaming, that's not Goldie. This is a different fish. I can tell because Goldie had a tiny pink spot under her chin and a tiny blue spot under her tail, and this fish doesn't. Where's my Goldie? Where is she? Parents screwed up royally. Papa looks like the lowest scum of the earth. Mama also is like, it was his idea, but I kind of was like, let's try it out. So Mama's like, look, I hate to tell you this. While you were at school yesterday, Goldie died. And sister's like, where is she? Now, child psychologists will tell you that kids of elementary school age understand the permanence of death. And they understand that like one thing leads to, one thing leads to another and a person dies or a pet dies. It's preschoolers who generally see death as a temporary thing, a non-permanent event, as they say. But sister seems to be going through the whole thing of like, where is my fish? And they're like, she's dead. And she's like, yeah, but where is she? Like, is this a real thing that I'm going to have to deal with? But so Mama's like, look, first of all, Mama immediately puts it on Papa. She's like, your father knew how upset you'd be about Goldie, so he thought it might be a good idea if he went to the pet store and got another fish, one that looked like Goldie. And sister's like, yeah, I get it. You tried to fool me about the death of my friend. And it's not right to try to fool someone about a thing like this. And then brother steps in and he's like, don't be too hard on Papa. He was just thinking of you. And sister's like, yeah, I know. That's it for that. So turns out sister wasn't asking, where is Goldie? Like, I don't believe she's dead. She was like, where is the body of my friend? And Mom is like, I wrapped her in a hanky. Here you go. And then she says, Goldie lived a happy life. Goldfish aren't meant to live very long. You took good care of her. She was a good friend. And sister's all, can I keep the hanky? Which is okay. They get a matchbox. It's a large matchbox, not like a little match, like not a matchbook. Just a large matchbox. Like you would buy your kitchen matches and put them in. They take the kitchen matches out of the matchbox, put them in a mug, apparently. Sister puts Goldie in the matchbox, closes the lid. They all go out to the back, and it's this procession. Brother has a shovel and a marker. Sister has the Goldie box. Mama is walking. Honey Bear outside, like holding her arms like you hold a toddler. And Papa looks absolutely disgusted with himself. He has this look on his face that's just like, I did the worst thing in the world. And all I can think about is that I am now going to go to hell for it. And so sister's like, bring the shovel, bring the waterproof markers. And Papa's like, we're all coming. We're all part of this now. Like we're all culpable. And they head out to the backyard, to the small hill behind the treehouse, which is apparently a thing that exists now. They find a medium-sized rock. Sister writes something on the rock. They dig a hole. They put the box in the hole. They cover it with dirt. Sister puts the rock in the little mound of dirt. They stand on the hill for a while and head back to the house. They have a little funeral for a friend. And then we have the last page, and it's the hill with the rock on. It says, here lies Goldie, who was a good fish. Sister got to be good friends with Goldie, too, but she never forgot Goldie. The end. Now, this book, this is a weird book. Most of this book deals with the deception that the parents pull on Sister to try to convince her that her friend isn't dead, which, as they say, in every single thing you look up about dealing with death with your children is the stupidest, most problematic thing you can do. It's understandable because you're trying to soften the blow, but the first thing every list says is be honest, be direct, be concrete, be straightforward. Children have a problem dealing with the permanence of death and the causes of death. The only fair thing you can do is just say, your friend died, your pet died, this thing died. Don't say passed away. Don't say, you know, like we lost them. Don't say they went away. Just say, is animals dead? You don't have to be, you know, blunt about it. You don't have to be gross about it, but you'd be honest about it. The parents did the absolute opposite of that. Now, obviously, Sister got very upset at them for doing that, but instead of demonstrating what to do by simply showing everyone doing the wrong thing and then not really addressing it, they could have dealt with it correctly. Like, you don't have to teach. I don't see. Okay, this book did terribly because, as Mike said, no one wants to read a Berenstain Bears book about the death of a pet. Like, you don't. If your child has experienced a death, if there's a death in the family, death of a pet, death of a friend, death of a family member, and you're a parent and you're like, I need to get books to help. We went through this with Mitzi. Like, how do we help Mitzi understand death? We went out and we found books about death. And Mike was like, yeah, if you were looking for a book to help your child deal with grief, then you go out and you find a book that helps a child deal with grief. There are books out there about that. There are storybooks and characters written explicitly to deal with that one subject. That is a very specific first time event in a child's life that you are like, all right, now it is time to deal with this. It's like a birth or sex. It's you find books specifically about that subject. And he's like, parents don't go to the Berenstain, like they don't think Berenstain Bears, I'm going to find this book on death. But also, he's like, the Berenstain Bear books are kind of impulse buys. They're on the rack. You see them, you're spinning the rack, and you're like, oh, I'll grab a Berenstain Bears book. It's fun. It's not expensive. It's a quick read. They're charming stories. They deal with life's issues, but they're not like... He's like, you don't spin the rack and are like, I'm going to get this book about death. He's like, that's just not... Parents don't grab that one for their kids. They're like, yeah, and that's a heavy subject. So... all these factors came, and I also assume, you know, they're transitioning to a new publisher. The art style has changed a little bit. All these factors came together to mean that nobody bought the Berenstain Bears Lose a Friend. It has nothing. There was no reason that anyone would ever have bought this book. But also, so when writing this book, they could have gone the route of Goldie dies and Mama and Papa, I don't know, do everything right. The big example that always gets used is the death of Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street. It's out there on YouTube. Look it up. If you haven't seen it or you haven't seen it in years, look up the death of Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street. They don't mince words. Big Bird has lost one of his best friends, a longtime fixture on the street, the owner of Hooper's store. Big Bird sees him every day. Everyone sees him every day. And he's dead. He's gone. And Big Bird is, of course, has the mind of a child. We don't know how old Big Bird is. He's decades old, but he has the mind of a child. And he doesn't understand what death is. He doesn't understand that death is permanent. He doesn't understand why a friend can die. And so the people on the street have to, not the people on the street, not just a bunch of people on the street, like his friends on Sesame Street, explain to him that Mr. Hooper has died. It is clear from the dialogue that they've already done this. Like, they're like, we told you that Mr. Hooper died. And he's like, yeah, but when's he coming back? Watch the thing. It's perfect. Big Bird denies it. And they just tell him flat out, he's dead and he's not coming back. He's dead and he's not coming back. But we can remember him. We hold him in our memories. We can tell great stories about him. And Big Bird's like, who's going to help me do this, that, and the other thing that Mr. Hooper always did? And they're like, we will. We love you and we're your friends. And that's what friends do. You know, like when a person dies, we fill in that space. That's what loved ones do. And it's handled beautifully. And no one had to handle things the wrong way so we can learn how to handle things the right way. Sister, we could have established that Sister had this fish and that it died. Sister could have found Goldie dead herself. And the parents could have helped her through that grief, because this book shows Sister getting upset and angry, not at Goldie's death, but at the chicanery of her parents, at the meaningless gesture of them trying to replace her dead friend with a lookalike, which maybe that's something parents do. If you're out there and you lost a fish, or you have a child who lost a fish, have you ever done the whole like switcheroo? Like, we're just going to replace this with another fish? It probably would have worked on me as a kid, because I was very thoughtless and inconsiderate and didn't pay attention to a lot of things if it wasn't on television. Like, you better believe I noticed when Bewitched switched Darren's. But maybe you've done that or had it done to you. What was the effect? Did it work? I don't know. But this book could have had Sister get upset at the actual death of her fish. And maybe Brother is like, oh man, it's just a fish. But for the parents to understand that for Sister, this is a huge deal. And she has, you know, maybe she could have said, like, can we leave Goldie in her bowl? And for the parents to say, no, Goldie is dead. This is just Goldie's body now. Goldie's body stopped working. Goldie's not going to eat anymore. Goldie's not going to swim anymore. Goldie has died, and this is just a dead fish now. Like, be blunt and honest about it. Like, that's useful. And for Sister to be upset about that, but also to, as Sister does, sit on the information and sort of take it in. It also says that you should take things slowly with children, which this book does not do. Sister does not have any time to process this. She is so busy trying to process the absolute switcheroo her parents pulled on her that she doesn't even have time to process her grief. And she immediately goes to, let's have a fun funeral, which I know that little kids do. I've seen Poltergeist. I know it. I know what the funeral of a pet is like. But this just helps us like bypass the whole grieving process. So they could, if they had had the death of Goldie earlier and Sister discovers Goldie, she freaks out, the parents explain to her that Goldie has died, then we could have had Sister actually processing this information, like seeing Sister process. Let children who read the book know that this is a slow process, that it's okay for them to be sad and upset and maybe make jokes about it or be angry about it. That's fine. And also, the experts say, as Sesame Street showed, let the children know that they have loved ones in their lives who are there to support them. And again, this is the death of a goldfish. Good place to start. You know, maybe Sister's like, now Goldie is gone. I don't have, what am I going to do when I come home from school? What am I going to do? I don't have anyone to feed in the morning. I don't have anyone to feed at night. And maybe they can say, we'll let you feed the cat, because I know that she's not Goldie, but she still needs your love and attention. And, we understand that Goldie had a special place in your heart, but you have a lot of really, really good friends who still love you. And a lot of, your family is here. Things like that reassure them that even though their friend has died, that their family is still there for them. People aren't leaving her. She's not losing everyone in her life. It's hard, but we're still here for you. And one of the big ones is let the grownups be sad. Let mama be sad. Maybe mama says, like, when I was a little girl, I lost my fish, or my dog died, or, something like that. And I was very sad, and I still get sad about it. It still makes me upset to think about it. And maybe have mama cry. Maybe have papa cry. Maybe papa went through this. Big, tough papa. Maybe he's like, when I was a little kid, I had a pet bird, and I loved that bird, and then it died. And maybe papa gets teary-eyed talking about it, because it's still important to him. This loss still sticks with us, because it is important to see that grown-ups grieve, and that grown-ups that losing some, being sad over the death of a loved one isn't a childish thing. It is a very human thing. And then let them have a funeral if they want to. Let them, don't say like you have to have a funeral for your pet, but it's like having a funeral for an adult, or a human. So read your child, see what they need. If a child doesn't want to go to a funeral, maybe they have to go, but they don't have to go up to the casket. They don't have to see the body. We don't go to a lot of funerals these days because of this damn disease. But even watching a Zoom ceremony or funeral may be hard for a child. So if they can't sit through it, like, let them observe what they can, and then let them leave, because this is death and it's a big deal. And also the big one is, let them know that life goes on for everyone who's not dead. It doesn't mean we forgot about the people, but let them know that that they're still here, and we're all still here, and we get to live, and we get to remember our friends and have fun and live these lives. Let sister experience that. Let sister go through these stages. Let the parents demonstrate the proper way to do this instead of the not proper way to do this, because this sitcom-y BS of replacing the goldfish doesn't help the book at all. It's bad. And then at the end, the kind of the insult to the injury of this book, and this book just makes me mad, is at the very end, it has this list, this bullet list of, when you lose a friend, here's some ideas for when you lose a pet. Have a simple funeral, nothing fancy. Draw a picture of your pet. Make a scrapbook of photos of your pet. You know, visit your pets. Visit the pets at an animal shelter. Volunteer to help out if you're old enough. That's a heavy one. Write an essay about your pet. What it does is it gives a list of things for the kid to do. Like, it's like, your parents aren't going to be any help. Here's some stuff you can do to process your own grief. And I'm like, and the last one is, get another pet. Replace it. Which is what this book is about. Like, the book makes the big show that you can't replace another pet. It puts all the responsibility of dealing with grief and loss on the kid and not on the parent. And I'm just like, dude, this is not the child's responsibility. This book should definitely be a guide for a parent instead of a book about how your parents aren't going to be any help when someone dies. Like, that's basically what this book. When someone dies, your parents are going to try to trick you about it. It's up to you to solve the mystery. Like, that's not a good book about grief. Losing a pet is a huge deal. We lost our pet. I would say this, we had a lovely cat, Lily, really Alana's cat. Lily lived to be 21 years old, and old cat. We knew that she was getting on in age, and eventually, you know, we had her euthanized. It happened. We brought, you know, the person came to the house, euthanized Lily out in the backyard. The slow decline of Lily was upsetting and hard and tragic. And the euthanization process was upsetting and hard and tragic and not ideal. And there's just no ideal way to do it. We have a wonderful organization in Minnesota called MN Pets that actually come out to your house, and they're wonderful. They do their best. It's an imperfect process, because it's never going to be ideal, but we bury Lily in the backyard, which you're not supposed to do, but people will turn aside if you want to. And I can tell you right now, digging a deep enough hole for an animal is not easy. But I did it. I dug a deep, deep hole, and we put her in a box with some of her favorite toys and, remembrances, for her, and a soft blanket, and we put her down in this hole. That's a cat, like, large cat. So it was a big hole. And then we bought a paving stone, to put over it, like as a grave cap, because that's what you do. You put a stone like in the grave, like a flat paving stone on top of the box. And I believe they wrote messages to Lily on the inside of the stone, like facing down, so that she would always like see it. And I'm getting a little choked up here just remembering it. Filled in the grave, and then on top of it is a stone, much like Goldie's stone, not with waterproof marker though, painted with waterproof acrylic paints. The beautiful, beautifully painted with Lily's name on it. And in the summer and springtime, that area of the backyard where her grave is gets completely overgrown. So you usually can't even see the stone. It's hidden from view, but it's still there, and Lily's still there. And every time I go down into so where she's buried kind of runs like parallel to the foundation of the house, like it's deep down. But when I'm down in the basement doing laundry, I always am aware that on the other side of that basement wall is Lily. I know that she's there. She wasn't my cat. I'm not a pet owner. She was definitely Alana's cat. But she was a presence in the house, and knowing that she's still like on the other side of that wall is kind of wild and comforting. I know she's there. Like, I know that that's, you know, and I know that it's just a grave, and I know that Lily isn't there, but Lily's there. And there's something very meaningful about that. And I feel like this book wanted you to believe that there was something meaningful about this, but that it treated it so slapdash and weird that it failed in every regard. So this is not a good book. It's not a good book. It's not a good book. It's not a good book. Sorry. I mean, and I know that Mike has a lot of mixed feelings about this book, especially coming so close on the heels of like the death of his dad. And it's just not a good book. So the Baron St. Bears lose a friend. Not a good book. Sorry, everyone. Not a good book about death. Not a good book about the bears, and not a good look for the parents. Buy something else. There's a lot of great books. Just look up, if you're looking for books on grief and loss, look it up. There's so many other better books out there. And Goldie deserved better. If I was one thing, good thing actually about this book, you got a lot of great pictures of Goldie. The drawings, the illustrations of specifically Goldie, top notch. You really get to love this fish. Top notch book about Goldie. So otherwise, no real reason to buy it. It's a bit of a dud. And it certainly didn't help me feel any better. So congratulations to the Berenstains. Thanks for this week. If you're looking for me, you can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast. You can write to me at BerenstainBearcast@gmail.com, or you can comment at BerenstainBearcast.com. You can actually go there, listen to the episodes, and actually comment on the blog posts. I get those comments. I get them every once in a while. Someone will write with a little comment, a little question. I had a commenter ask, why don't I make this show more adult-oriented, since it's pretty much adults who listen to the show? Why don't I go a little bluer? Why don't I get a little more racy in my conversation? And a lot of podcasts are. A lot of podcasts do that. They're like, we're talking to grownups here. We don't have to mince words. And I think it's because I'm not really that way. I will make the bluest of blue jokes, amongst my friends, but that's not really who I am. And also, I made a promise when I started this show that this was going to be a show that you could more or less safely play in front of your kids. Sometimes I'll talk about darker topics and stuff, but it's definitely never goes beyond PG-13, the way I talk about the Berenstain Bears. And also, I'm not here to lampoon the bears. I'm not here to go off on too many tangents, even though I do. I'm just here to talk about the Berenstain Bears and talk about them in a way that I would feel comfortable if Mike listened to an episode. He might not agree with me. He might get furious at my opinions, but at least don't know that I'm not trying to be blatantly provocative in the way I talk about the books. So that's just me. It's just my thing. I don't mind other podcasts that go off in a more adult direction. I've been on many of them and have gone off in many a direction. So yeah, that's just the way I am. If you want to find other podcasts that I'm on, you can listen to It's Del Toro Time, a podcast I do with Willow, my older child, where we talk about horror stories and movies and just sort of chat as father and child about pop culture and mostly just books and stories, scary stories that aren't necessarily ever that scary. I also do Pizza Toast, a Babysitter's Club podcast with my friend and guest of this show, Christy Admiral, where you talk about the Netflix Babysitter's Club series. We're currently talking about the HBO series from the 1990s, which is fun. But we'll be going back now that they've announced season 2 of the Netflix series. Our fingers are tightly crossed about that, covering that. So that's going to be fun. And then, of course, Click It Cast, Beverly Cleary podcast that I'm wrapping up with John McCoy, who is the host of Sophomore Lit, where we've been going through the works of Beverly Cleary. We're currently on her memoirs, so we're finally closing the door on the Beverly Cleary series, but it's out there. Click It Cast. So if you want more of me in your life, that's where you can find more of me. But thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. You can go to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry if you want to throw any money my way. I put up some bonus stuff on there every once in a while. I have several devoted followers whom I love and adore. They are just It's a small group, very, very small group, but it helps pay the bills. It helps keep me in Berenstain Bear books, basically. It pays for these books that I have to order used, and just helps me out. It helps me keep this show up and running, helps pay for the hosting site that I use for this show. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. Stay safe, stay cool, do what you need to do to get by, and I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country.